Sai Ram, dear listeners, welcome to this week's Radio Sai Answering Booth, the show where I invite questions from you listeners and answer them on the basis of Swami's message. I'm Prem, your friend from Team Radio Sai, and possibly the one who has benefited most from this program. So heartfelt gratitude to all of you who have sent questions for this show and to all the listeners for the love and acceptance of this show. When someone writes saying, thanks to the show, we are able to relate to Swami's message better, all I can say is it is music to the ears. That is the only motive of this endeavor, to learn together, to explore together, to grow together and align our lives to Swami's message. I don't think anything else can give Swami more joy. So offering our humble pranams to Swami and pledging that we will do our best to make our lives a reflection of His message, let's head to this week's show. As always, we have an interesting question this week. Actually, we have a set of questions. And a spoiler alert, the answer is going to be pretty heavy this evening, so you might just want to pump up the caffeine in your body, but I'll try to make it as simple as I can, for even I don't enjoy complexity. Nor does Swami, isn't it? But I'll try to make it as simple as I can, as I said, but we'll get to the question when we get to it. Right now, it's time for the quote of the week. And I have no clue about the source of this quote. It's a two-liner that conveys an important message, and that's why I've picked it up to share it with all of you on the show. So here it goes. I quote, "You have to let people go. Everyone who is in your life are meant to be in your journey, but not all of them are meant to stay till the end." End of quote. If there's one thing that we all will learn through our own experience in life, it's this. Not all people who come into our lives are here to stay. And the longer we live, the more we will agree with this statement. I've said this on many earlier occasions too, I'm sure, that we can learn so much and understand better life itself if we look at life as a journey and not a destination. When we consider life as a journey, we will consider our possessions as our luggage. And we all know, less luggage, more comfort makes travel a pleasure. When we look at life as a journey, we will constantly review if we are progressing towards the destination. Only that step which takes us closer is really worthwhile. In the same manner, when we see life as a journey, we will consider all those who come into our life as co-passengers for a brief time. We will interact with them, learn from them, try to make their journey comfortable too, but will not get attached to them, for the destination may be the same, but the journey, the paths, are as unique as each person is. I think especially younger people should keep this in mind, because when young, we have this tendency to bring enormous change into our lives just to please or impress or hold on to people who come into our lives. If the changes are good, well, it's all right, but if these changes are counterproductive, we are jeopardizing our journey for people with whom we are at best crossing paths with, isn't it? So just keeping this in mind, merely as a reminder that all people whom we meet are not important in this journey and are not going to travel with us till the end, will actually make the journey more fun for ourselves and for others. We will be more pleasant, more tolerant, more accommodative, and most importantly, less attached. Generally, when we get attached to a person, say a friend, family, spouse, sibling, we find ourselves happy in the present, and that happiness itself leads to a fear, as Swami would himself describe it. The fear of going through a phase when that person is not going to be a part of our life. But when we spend time with such a person, do so like you are driving past a beautiful scene, say the sun setting over a brilliant horizon. Live that moment, soak in the scene and fill your heart, but keep moving. The scene may vanish after a while, but the joy the beautiful scene brings will last for a long, long time to come. As Keats put it, a thing of beauty is a joy forever. So enjoy the company of people you love, but remember, most of them only give us companionship for a short while in this journey. Before we head to the question, permit me, dear listeners, to read the quote from that unknown source one more time. I quote, "You have to let people go. Everyone who is in your life are meant to be in your journey, but not all of them are meant to stay till the end." let's then head to this week's question. The question is from one of our regular listeners. I've had, I think, two, three or four questions from this listener already. And she is Miss Praveena Kilpadi from Delhi. And I think every time she has sent us a question, it has given us an opportunity to go back into Swami's message and pick out some fundamental aspects of Swami's message. And today too, it's a question like that, which is more fundamental, not really practical, relating to a practical problem in life, but something which will give us a more grounded fundamental understanding of a certain aspect of Swami's message, and that's why it's important. So let's first listen to her questions, and we'll take it from there.
Sai Ram, this is Praveena from Delhi. I have two questions. My aunt and I were discussing this last week. The first question is, as we take birth to live out our karma, and our prarabdha in our current lifetime is predetermined, are we then born with a certain guna combination, or do our thoughts and actions influence our gunas? And what about the role played by the three doshas? The second question is about realization. Is there a difference between self-realization and God-realization? Swami has said that when you get sakshatkara, you do not live in this body for more than 21 days. But many realized souls like Raman Maharshi and Ramakrishna lived way beyond that. Could you please share your thoughts on this? Thank you. Sai Ram.
Thank you, Ms. Praveena, for that, for those questions. I'm sorry about the audio. I think it was a bit low. To give you a summary of what she was asking there, just in case you didn't catch those questions, there were actually four different questions in that 1 minute that I played out. In fact, four distinct themes, if I could put it. One is about on the gunas, and the specific question that she was asking is, are we born with a specific combination of gunas, and do they really influence every action that we do and every choice that we make? And can that combination of gunas be modified? That's one of the questions that she asked. And the continuation of that, if I could say, was about the three doshas. The three doshas in the body, do they also influence the choices we make and the actions that we perform? And can they be changed by conscious effort? And the third is about, is self-realization and God-realization one and the same? And lastly, what happens when a person attains or experiences sakshatkar? Swami has said that a person eventually dies, probably in a span of about 21 days. He gives up the body, he or she gives up the body. So if that is the case, what about the great saints that we have come across in India, be it Ramakrishna, Paramahamsa or Ramana Maharshi or many, many sages like that? How is it that they've lived for many years being gurus to their disciples? Well, as I said, these are four questions and they're pretty distinct from each other. So what I thought was probably we'll take this over two sessions because each one of them are pretty theoretical, and if I'm going to go into the details, as you will see today, it is going to be a bit heavy. So I thought we will do it over 2 weeks. So for today, I will talk about the questions on the three gunas and the three doshas. Probably for the next week, we will continue the same question and we'll talk about self-realization, God-realization, what's the difference and what happens when a person experiences sakshatkar. So coming back to the question, and as I said, it's not just about the three gunas, it's about can we really change the combination of our three gunas when we're born, and through our actions, through our conscious choice, can we change that? You know, talking about the same thing, I think it again goes back to a theme that we've spoken of under different topics, and that is about the challenge between nature and nurture. How much influence does our nature have in the way we lead our lives, and how much can the nurture or the culturing that we undergo change the way we lead our lives? Right, that's the debate, and we've spoken this when we've spoken about prarabdha karma, we've spoken about when we were talking about vasanas, when we were talking about what happens to life after death. I think in many of these occasions we've dealt with this topic of, are we really bound and drawn and driven and, you know, under the influence of our nature, or can we make that change by conscious choice? Yes, the gunas we come with do influence our actions, right? That's why we come across many people in our life and we can clearly say that this person is sattvic, this person is rajasic, and this person is tamasic. And I'm making an assumption that all our listeners are familiar with what we call as gunas and doshas. If you're not, the gunas are the three attributes, sattva, rajas, and tamas. Sattva is supposed to be the pure quality. Rajas is supposed to be the more aggressive and active quality. And tamas is supposed to be the more slothful and more, if I could say, deluding quality, right? So when we meet people, we know that there are some people who are predominantly under the influence of the sattvic quality. They're more calm, they're more peaceful, they're more loving, they're more compassionate. And then there are some people who are very rajasic in the sense of they're action-oriented. They're always trying to achieve something, they're always trying to do something with their lives. And of course, the slothful ones are always there under the influence of tamas. So we do see that there are people who are different in nature, right? So the gunas do decide our actions to an extent. But to the question that can we modify these gunas, yes, there is a way it can be modified, and that choice is always there, right? The choice to resist the pull of our nature, what we refer to as vasanas. These gunas are nothing but the color or the flavor of our vasanas. When we say vasanas, it is the collected impression of over many births. The fears that we have, the insecurities that we feel, the passion that we feel, the likes and dislikes, all of this comes from what we have gathered over lifetimes, and it forms the vasanas. And that's why even in the same family, children born to the same parents are so different. In fact, even within twins, you will find that there is so much of difference in the way each approaches life. And this is because of the vasanas that one carries forward from life to life. And when we refer to as gunas, they are the nature of these vasanas, or the guna combination of these vasanas. So yes, this ability to change, this ability to resist the influence of one's gunas is always there. And that is the basis of all of our spiritual endeavor, isn't it? But the more these vasanas become more strong, the more intense they are, the more difficult it is to resist, the more difficult it is to make choices and act in a way that is against or contrary to the nature of our gunas. And that's why many times I've quoted this of Duryodhana saying in the Mahabharata, where he says, janami dharmam nachame pravritti, janami papam nachame nivritti, which means that I know what is dharma, but I am unable to practice it. I know what is sin, but I am unable to refrain or restrain myself from it. Meaning that it is not possible, right? It is not possible for one to resist the pull of one's vasanas. But it's just that when the vasanas become more stronger, more overpowering, the ability to resist becomes little more weaker. It becomes more difficult to resist, and it becomes more difficult to act against it. But that pure impulse is always there. And that, as we've mentioned many times on this show, what Swami speaks about the idea of conscience and the idea of the buddhi, that is always there in every individual. And whenever Swami speaks about buddhi, Swami would say buddhi is the, if I'm quoting Swami right, Swami says buddhi is like the son of the Atma. So it has the attributes of the Atma, the ability to at any time discern what is right and what is wrong. That ability is there in every human being, however demonic that person may appear, however adharmic that person may appear. That quality to choose right from wrong and to discern what is the right thing to do is there in each person. And the ability to make that choice is also there. But as we've spoken about the mind, it is manas, buddhi, chitta and ahankara, right? And this chitta is like that hard disk which stores this vasana, our impressions over many lifetimes. When this chitta is filled with these vasanas which are so overpowering, it becomes more and more difficult, but it is never impossible. And I think that's why, if I'm not wrong, Premavahini Swami speaks of this in the first chapter, when Swami says, yes, the nurture can change a person's character and one's goodness or badness. He gives the example of how Ratnakara becomes Valmiki. He says that a person who was such a dacoit, couldn't he become a sage? And what about Angulimala? And we know many such stories of transformation where a person changes his nature by conscious choice. So that ability to turn to purity is always there. And similarly, the the basal tendencies are also always there. Even though a person may appear sattvic, even though the person may appear good, that nature to go astray is also there. And that is why the importance of constant vigilance is always emphasized in spirituality. And we've seen that so many times, even in Swami's devotees, we've seen that people lead a very noble life for an extended period of time, and then suddenly something happens, as Swami would say, vikriti, you know, your mind changes, you start making wrong choices, and you start empowering the lower or the bad tendencies in you. So just like how a bad person can eventually become good, a good person can also slip and fall. So because all of these tendencies, what we refer to as the three gunas, are there in each person. And when we refer to a person as sattvic or when we refer to a person as tamasic, we are only saying that this person is exhibiting that particular guna more prominently than the other gunas. It does not mean that he does not have the sattvic guna in him, or so and so does not, he is so sattvic that he does not have the rajasic guna in him. It is not so. As we will come to that, when we talk about the gunas, the idea of gunas as given by the Vedic literature, we will realize that this is something like the building block of whatever we see in life, what we are, our thoughts, our body, our emotions, and the creation itself. Everything is suffused with these three gunas, which means it is always there in some combination or the other. And I recall when we were doing a particular presentation on the three gunas when we were in the university, this was the example we had given. We had taken a table fan, and we know a table fan has three blade table fan, and we had covered two of those blades with a red color paper and one of them with probably a green color or a blue color. And then when the fan is rotating, you would see that the fan would appear red. But when we turn off the fan, they will see that there are other colors too. But because the predominant color is red, that is what you see. And that was the example we had given for the gunas too. That what choices we make most of the time during the day and during our life decides which guna we are operating from. That does not mean the other gunas are not there. Most often they are dormant. So even in a person who is acting a lot from the rajasic or the tamasic gunas, has the sattva always inside him or inside her, constantly in a dormant state. And we will come to that part where this can be literally brought out from within and you can change your guna itself. And about the three doshas, I think I'll come to that right in the end of today's answer. And it's slightly different from the concept of gunas, but of course it is connected to the three gunas, and there is a way by which the three gunas and the three doshas, and when I say three doshas, it is a concept primarily used in Ayurveda about the three natures which are there in the human body, the Vata, Pitta and Kapha, right? And that's another concept, we'll come to that. But right now we'll talk about the gunas. You know, whenever we talk about the three gunas, we always talk of them as qualities of a person, right? Either you make, you're a sattvic person, as I said, or a rajasic person. We always talk of it as an attribute of a person, but we don't realize that the three gunas are fundamental to the idea of creation itself. It is literally like the building block. And that's why whenever Swami speaks about three gunas, Swami would say the entire perceivable world, whatever you are seeing, whatever you're interacting with, is nothing but the interplay of these three gunas. And that is the fundamental idea of these three gunas, and that whole process of how creation came to be with the play of the gunas is very important. May not be directly related to the question, but I think we'll go into that to a little in a little detail, because I think sometime back we had a question on early morning prayers, and I had made a reference to what Swami says about the day being separated into rajasic time, tamasic time, and sattvic time, and how the early morning prayer is very important to utilize that sattvic time, right? And at that time I had said that I have a question on three gunas coming up and I'll speak about it. So I'll have this opportunity to speak about it in reference to that question too. And it will also give us an example of how we can change our nature, just because that is the basic question. Can we, through our actions and choices, change the combination of our gunas? And that we will see when we look at this very, very basic explanation of how creation came to be, right? we all know that before everything was there, before the creation was there, God was in his absolute state. That's something which we often come across in many of the scriptures. In fact, in the scriptures of other religions too, we talk about a nirguna aspect of God, where God is attributeless. God cannot be described as being anything, right? You can't talk of him, you can't even talk of God as him or her. It's that sort of a state where God does not have any attributes, he does not have any gunas. There is no God is this or God is that, or he's compassionate, he's loving. You cannot have any attributes attributed to him because he is attributeless, right? So that state of divinity cannot be explained by anything at all. You cannot add anything to God is dash. If you want to fill that dash, there is no attribute you can put there to fill. And that's why when you talk of this absolute state, you only speak about God is. And that isness, that existence, is the only attribute that God has, if you can call that an attribute, right? So when Swami would say that I separated myself from myself to love myself, and the first step of that, the attributeless should take on an attribute so that he can be related to, he can be understood. Please forgive me, I keep saying he, it does not, I think it would be a little disrespectful to say it, so I'm saying he, but actually there is no he or she that can be attributed to God in this stage, or in any stage for that matter. So this attributeless needs to take on attributes so that he can be perceived in a certain manner. Swami speaks of one very beautiful concept, which probably is not related to this, where Swami would say asti, bhati, priyam, right? They are the different stages in which we interact with any object or any person or any situation, where asti, as I said, is that concept of isness. It is existence. Asti in Sanskrit means is. So astitvam means the existence of God. So first there is astitvam, existence. Asti, bhati. Bhati means effulgence. So this existence puts on a way by which it can be perceived. And bhati is, when we say effulgence, it does not necessarily mean light. It means a way of perceiving it, the way of interacting with it. And Swami says asti, bhati, and then only priyam can come. Whether you like it or you don't like it, you fear it, you want it, you don't want it. All those emotions come only after this asti comes to the stage of bhati, where it allows itself to be perceived by another individual. So that is the first process. Swami says this absoluteness, in this process of becoming many, the first thing it does is it takes on attributes, or it puts out attributes through which it can be known. And this moment, when Swami would often describe it as I separated myself from myself to love myself. So that basis, the sankalpa of creation itself, Swami would say, is love. To love and to be loved. That is the seed of the sankalpa of creation itself. So when that happens, Swami says the first quality to come forth is sattva, or purity. And this sattva is nothing but born out of that feeling of love, to be loved and to love, right? And this divinity in this state, where God is absolute, attributeless, but the only quality that he's taken on right now is the quality to love, right? And this state is sometimes referred to as Shuddha Sattva, or the state of pure Sattva, where only divinity is there and only this quality of Sattva has been taken over. And many times we refer to the soul also as Shuddha Sattva. When we talk about Sakshatkar, we are looking for the vision of this Shuddha Sattva, or trying to go back to this Shuddha Sattva. So the first formation in this sequence of creation is what we call Shuddha Sattva, where God, who is attributeless, takes on this quality of Sattva. And from the Sattva, Swami says, the first quality to come out, or the first element, and this is the point where what we refer to in Sanatana Dharma as Panchabhutas, or the five elements, come in. Again, this is a concept which is so central to Vedic literature and to Swami's discourses. Swami refers to the three gunas and the Panchabhutas. I think the references are ubiquitous. Almost every discourse Swami would make some form of reference to the gunas and the Panchabhutas. So this is the first process through which the Panchabhutas, or the elements, come into being. this absolute when it interacts with this sattva quality. Swami says the first element to come out is akasha. And when I say akasha, when I say the element of sky, it is not the element that we see it as we see it when we go out and look up. It's not the sky that way. The first elements which are formed are actually the subtle elements. They're not the gross elements. The gross elements come much, much later, as we will see. We are talking about the subtle elements, which are also referred to as tanmatras. So the subtle sky is the first one to be formed from this interaction between the absolute and sattva, the quality of sattva. So when this absolute interacts with this quality of sattva, Swami says, what is born is akasha. And what is akasha, or what is this ether? It is nothing but emptiness, right? It does not have any other attribute other than it being just empty. So it's a very, very beautiful concept where they're saying, even before anything could come, the concept of nothing must first come. And that's what is represented by the creation of akasha, or this subtle element of ether or sky, as we would like to call it. So first, this attributeless becomes Shuddha Sattva, and from there comes this idea of emptiness. And that's why there is this very, very beautiful kavali. I'm sure most of you would have heard it. It's a kavali composed by the music maestro A.R. Rahman. A kavali which was, I think, one of the recent movies. It draws inspiration from the Quran, where these words are there, kun fayakun. The meaning of that itself is God said, be, and it all came to be. That's what it means, kun fayakun. And it's a very, very beautiful kavali. And there is this wonderful line in that with a very subtle indication of what I was just talking about, the akasha, where he says, jab kahi pe kuch nahi bhi nahi tha. Where he says, when not God, the whole line is, jab kahi pe kuch nahi bhi nahi tha, wahi tha wahi tha. Which means, even before nothing came to be, God was there. The writer does not say that God was there even before everything else came to be. He says, even before the idea of nothing was there, God was there. Jab kahi pe kuch nahi bhi nahi tha, wahi tha wahi tha. And it's a very, very subtle indication of this thing. So the first attribute that God creates for himself is emptiness, nothingness. So this nothingness is the first one to be created. It's a very, very beautiful concept. And then Swami says, with this nothingness, with space, the sense of hearing comes, which means this absolute, there is no way, no approach point to understand him or to relate to him. Swami says the first attribute God gives himself is the attribute of being able to hear him, to be able to reach out to him through the form of sound. So that's why Swami would say the pranava is the first form of God. The God exists in the akasha as pranava or omkara. That is the first form of God. So the first way by which God can be approached is through that of sound. And at this point, Swami says, the other qualities slowly come in. The quality of rajas comes in. And this absolute with its interaction with sattva first creates akasha. Now through sattva and a little bit of rajas, this akasha gives rise to what we refer to as vayu or wind, where for the first time movement comes. From nothingness, when a little bit of the rajas quality comes in, Swami says the movement comes, and with movement comes wind, and with vayu or wind, again the subtle element vayu, Swami says the ability to feel through the sense of touch comes in. Because as we all know, the wind cannot be seen, cannot be, it can be heard, but it cannot be seen. It can be heard and it can be felt. So from the akasha comes vayu with these two qualities. It can also be heard, but now it can also be felt. So a little bit of that rajas quality comes in. And then from there comes the third element, the third subtle element of Agni. And Swami says, for the first time, the absolute can also be seen. And when I say Agni, it's again not the fire that we all relate to. It is just the attribute of being able to not only hear him, not only feel him, but also see him. So for the first time, the attribute of sight comes into being. And this comes with the, again, predominantly sattva, a little bit of rajas, which is the movement, and a little bit, a very, very small quantities of tamas, because that is how the elements become more and more grosser and heavier, as we will see. And a little bit of tamas comes in, and now the quality, the element of fire comes into being. And from that fire comes, Swami says, now a little more of tamas comes, a little less of the rajas, and probably a little lesser of sattva. And Swami says, the element of water comes in. The panchabhuta, the tanmatra of the subtle water, or apa, as it is called. And with water comes the feeling of taste, or the sense of taste, the ability to taste this absolute, which was otherwise not approachable by any means. And then a little more of tamas. In fact, the last element comes with much more of tamas and very, very less of rajas. And the sattva quality is, of course, predominant in all of these subtle elements. And with that comes the prithvi, or the earth element, the subtle element of earth. And that's why I think, if I'm not wrong, it's the Anandavali where it so beautifully describes this whole process as akashat vayuhu vayur agnihi agnirapaha adya prithvi, which means from akasha comes vayu, from vayu comes agni, from agni comes apaha, or water, and from there comes prithvi, the fifth element. And Swami says that this is how the elements come into being, the subtle elements. And from the subtle elements, the five ways of approaching God. The last one, I think I missed it out. The sense of smell comes in. So from the attributeless, not being, it cannot be approached by any means, first becomes nothingness. And that nothingness comes with the attribute of sound. And next comes the attribute of being felt. The third one being the attribute of being one being able to see it. And the next one being that of taste, and the last one being of smell, where each of the progressive elements come with the quality of the previous element and an extra quality. And that is how it becomes grosser and grosser, and the quantity of tamas increases in each one of these. And Swami says that this is the subtle building block. This is the subtle building block of the entire universe, and this subtle building block predominantly has the sattva guna. And Swami says, when this whole, you will see, we will see that in the next few minutes, how again the sattvic quality and rajas quality interacts with these five subtle elements and produces even more further components, and the gross elements come, human beings come, and the senses come from all of that. So all of these has the basis in that shuddha sattva, or the pure feeling of sattvic. So that's why Swami says that sattva is there within each one of us. So how do we bring that out? Yes, we'll come to that. So now, from this idea of the absolute, the five elements, Swami says, when each of these subtle elements are interacting with sattva, what we get are what we refer to as the jnanendriyas, right? The sense of being able to hear, being able to see, being able to touch, being able to smell, and being able to taste. These are what we refer to as the jnanendriyas, the sense organs of perception. So Swami says that when each of these elements, the subtle elements of sky, the earth, the water, and the wind and the fire interact with the sattva quality, again it gives rise to these jnanendriyas. And that is how from akasha comes the ability to listen, and from vayu comes the ability to sense, from agni comes the ability to see, from water comes the ability to taste, and from earth comes the sense organ of the sense of smell. So this is how the qualities come when interacting with sattva. So all of these qualities of sound, touch, sight, taste, and smell, these perceptions are based in the sattvic quality. And this is something which is very, very important to come. And now each of these subtle elements now interact with the quality of rajas. As I said, rajas is the more aggressive quality, or the quality of action, of movement. And that's how the movement comes into this still existence. So Swami says, now when each of these subtle elements react with rajas, it gives rise to what we refer to as the karmendriyas, or the sense organs of action. And that's how Swami says, when akasha interacts with Rajas, what you get is vak, or the ability to speak. When vayu interacts with rajas, you have the you have the karmendriya of the hands. And when agni, you have feet. When water and earth, they interact with rajas, you have the excretory organs. So the jnanendriyas are born out of the subtle elements. The jnanendriyas are born out of sattva, and the karmendriyas are born out of rajas. So simply from this, what we can say is, to be sattvic, you have to indulge more in the usage of the karmendriyas and restrict the usage of the, So being sattvic is nothing but involving more of your jnanendriyas as much as possible and reducing the use of the karmendriyas. And this is how the Atman and the five elements and their interaction produces the jnanendriyas and karmendriyas, right? But all of these five elements, Swami says, when they interact with sattva in one unit, we spoke of sattva interacting with each one of them separately. Swami says, now all of them together, all the five elements together, when they interact with sattva, they give rise to what we refer to as the antakarnas, or manas, buddhi, chitta, ahankara. And the reason why Swami says this is a very beautiful logical reason. Swami says, because the antakarna, or the mind, has all of these qualities. Without the mind, you cannot sense smell, you cannot sense sight, you cannot sense touch, you cannot have the ability to taste. The brain or the mind is behind all of these senses, right? So in that sense, the antakarna has all of these qualities. All of these sense organs are present in the antakarna. And that's why Swami says, when all the five subtle elements interact with sattva guna in union, what is born is the antakarnas of manas, buddhi, chitta, ahankara. Now, when all of these elements in a similar manner interact with rajas, when they interact with sattva, you get the antakarnas. When they interact with rajas, Swami says, the pranashakti is formed. And what we refer to as pranashakti, we've spoken about it before, what we refer to in the body as the pranamaya kosha, where you have these five different life forces, which are the different forms of life forces, which form the same one unit of the pranashakti, the prana, apana, vyana, udana, and samana. That is what forms the pranashakti. And this pranashakti is brought about by the interaction of the five subtle elements with the quality of rajas. And all this while, we are only talking about the subtle elements, and Swami says all of this is in the subtle world, what gives us the subtle existence. Now we come to what we refer to as the gross world. And from here is where the quality of tamas starts playing a very important role. And this process where the subtle elements become the gross elements of the sky, the ether, the water, the fire, the earth, and the wind, the gross elements of these panchabhutas, this process is referred to as panchikritam or panchikarna in the scriptures. And Swami gives a very beautiful and interesting way of understanding this. Swami says that imagine there are these five people representing each of these elements, and each one of them have with them eight anas. So imagine if the person who is representing Akasha puts four anas from his collection in one unit, in one container, and the other four people who represent each of the other elements, each one steps forward and puts one ana from what they have. Now what is formed, which is four anas of Akasha and one ana each of the other elements, this is what is the gross Akasha, or the real element, what we talk of as the element of ether. So Swami says this process happens through the interaction of the tamasic guna, or the guna which makes things gross or heavy or pulls down the ability to move or to be subtle, right? So with the interaction of sattva, this process of panchikritam happens, where what we refer to as the element of Akasha is one half the subtle Akasha with components from each of the other elements, one quarter each of the other elements. Similarly, when we come to vayu, it is one half of vayu, the subtle element, and one quarter each of the other elements. And in this manner, Swami says, through the process of the interaction between the subtle elements and the quality of tamas, the gross elements are formed. And these gross elements, as Swami would say, they eventually form the world as we see it, the gross world as we see it. And all through, the subtle world still continues to exist through the subtle elements. But the gross world, as we see, now has a much, much more component of the tamas which has got into this gross element, and that is how the creation has come to be. And all through, Swami says, there is this divinity or the Shuddha Sattva which is present in each one of these gross elements, right? Sorry. And this is what Swami says, that after this also, each one of these qualities still retain that sattvic aspect in them. And when everything that we see and we interact with is actually born out of nothing but this, five elements and the three gunas, Swami says that the quality of the three gunas infuse every aspect of life. And that's how even the day has the three gunas. Emotions can be categorized as whether they are sattvic, rajasic or tamasic. The way we speak can be categorized as whether it's sattvic, rajasic or tamasic. Our thoughts can be categorized that way. Food can be categorized that way. I think that's one thing which we have spoken about before, where there is sattvic food, rajasic food and tamasic food. And similarly, company can be categorized as sattvic, rajasic and tamasic. Activities can be categorized. In fact, when Swami speaks about the Ramayana, Swami would often say this. The entire Ramayana is nothing but a play of the three gunas. The three gunas represented by different characters and different scenarios presenting themselves in front of you. Swami would say that the three wives of Dasharatha, they represent Sattva, Rajas and Tamas. Then coming to the three women that Rama encounters in the Balakanda, which is Ahalya, Tataki and Mother Sita, they represent the three gunas. Then the three brothers of Ravana, Vibhishana and Kumbhakarna, they represent the three gunas. So Swami would say that the entire Ramayana is nothing but a play of the three gunas, and how you can constantly keep choosing one over the other. How do you deal with, and there's that even that beautiful episode of when Hanuman is trying to leap across the ocean. He encounters three obstacles. One is sattvic, one is rajasic and one is tamasic. So the entire story is about how do you deal with these different combination of these gunas which come to you. Now coming to the point of how do you reconstitute yourself if my vasana is predominantly tamasic or my vasana is predominantly rajasic? What can I do to change that component? The answer is there in whatever we have discussed so far. And one of the beautiful things which Swami says is, you know, the most sattvic element is, as we have seen in the description, is the akasha. It has got the maximum amount of sattva in it, because that is born, the first thing to be born from the attributeless is the akasha, right? And that has got the maximum amount of sattva in it. And when that again interacts with the sattvic quality, Swami says what is born is the sense of hearing. So that hearing is one of the most important ways by which one can increase one's sattvic content in the vasanas, if I can put it that way. And that is why Shravanam is given such an important place even in spirituality. And Swami would often say Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam is very important. Or we talk about Shravanam being the first step in the spiritual path. You start with Shravanam and Kirtanam. And Swami would say, see, the sattvic quality gives rise to the sense of listening, and the rajasic quality gives rise to the sense of speech. So the direct message that you can take from that, Swami explains, is when you speak less and when you listen more, you automatically are turning towards a sattvic life. So when this choice of let me listen, let me absorb more, let me do this mananam and let me absorb what I hear from others, when one goes into that mode, and it'll automatically become that you're leading a sattvic life. And similarly, and Swami said that all the jnanendriyas are born out of sattva, right? That's what we saw. All the jnanendriyas have their roots in the sattvic quality. And Swami says that is why whatever goes through the jnanendriyas have to be sattvic. And that's something which always Swami says, see what is good, do what is good, hear what is good. And that is why whatever you take in through your jnanendriyas should always be sattvic. And that is one way by which you can readily ensure that your tendency is turning towards sattvic. And as I said, you know, we spoke about the karmendriyas being a result of the rajasic. For instance, we spoke about the element of water and earth giving rise to the excretory organs. Well, I can't choose today to say that I don't want to be rajasic, so I will not use these karmendriyas which are born out of rajas. Swami says, no, that is not possible. As long as you live in this world which is infused with the three gunas, you have to go through and use all of these gunas. You cannot run away from them. Just like how we said the act of sleeping is actually tamasic. But I cannot wake up today and say that tomorrow onwards I'm not going to sleep because that's a tamasic quality. But there are ways by which you can regulate each one of these. And that's why the whole process is so important. Swami says everything is born out of sattva. And as long as sattva leads the other two gunas, you're good to go. You don't have to worry about anything. And that is why the first step is, as I was saying, the jnanendriyas are the most important thing. When you make a conscious decision to take in only what is sattvic, that is one of the first steps. That is why good company is the starting stage of making this choice to turn towards a pure life. The company that you keep, when I say company, it's not just of people, of the books, of the food, of everything else, company, when we talk of whatever we fill our lives with. And it all starts with that choice. When we start making the choice between the sattvic company that we can take and the other forms of company, when we constantly make this choice, Swami says that you are gravitating towards a sattvic life. And the next thing is about, Swami says, how the rajas and tamas cannot be completely done away with. As I said, you cannot stop using the organs of excretion. You cannot stop sleeping. But Swami says you can regulate it using the quality of sattva. And let me go back to the answer that I had given a long time ago about the day also having this quality in different time periods during the day. As I mentioned there, Swami would say morning 4 o'clock to about 8 in the morning is sattvic time. From morning 8 to again about 4 o'clock in the evening, Swami says, is rajasic time. Again 4 to about 8 in the evening is sattvic time. And 8 in the night to 4 in the morning is tamasic time. So Swami says that when you say that this is what is the nature of that time, it means that you have to do those activities which pertain to that particular guna. So that time of from night 8 to morning 4, Swami says it has to be utilized for sleep. So just because it has to be utilized for sleep, Swami says, it does not mean that you just eat and sleep. Swami says, can you infuse a little bit of sattva into that period? So Swami would suggest that can you pray before you go to sleep? Can you read some elevating literature before you go to sleep? Can you listen to something, a spiritual discourse before you go to sleep? Or at least, if not anything, think of God, meditate on Him, chant His name before you go to sleep. So that way you are still doing a tamasic activity, but you are leading it along through the act, through a sattvic quality. So similarly, Swami would say that morning 8 to evening 4 is the rajasic time. That is the time for activity. And Swami says that you all should be involved in activity. But you can't say that I want to be a sattvic person, so I will not involve in activity. Swami says you lead the activity with sattva guna. You entertain good thoughts through the day. And Swami would say that is why the practice of doing that Sandhya Vandanam in different times of the day, there is a afternoon Sandhya which they perform. Swami would say that this is precisely the reason where you break this activity of the day, break this rajasic quality that you go through and say that let me infuse a little bit of sattva into this. So Swami would say this is what you need to do. If you want to turn towards sattva, these are the points by which you can do it. One is use the fact that the jnanendriyas are born out of the sattvic qualities. So whatever the jnanendriyas take in should be sattvic. Again, the antakarnas are born out of sattva. So whatever you think about, whatever you ruminate on, whatever you are gathering in your mind should be sattvic. And these are the choices which we can make and we can change our quality. And finally, going back to what I spoke about, Shuddha Sattva, the most sattvic quality that is there in each one of us is, at the end of the day, love. Because this whole thing has started with the idea of Swami saying, I chose to love myself and so I separated myself from myself. So that love is the direct expression of sattva that we all experience in our day-to-day life. So eventually, a sattvic person is one who is able to operate from that level of love as much as possible. And when we say love, compassion, empathy, trying to make others happy and trying to make others' life comfortable, right? That's what it is. And when that becomes a spontaneous thought, when every time I make a choice, it is that love that is operating, and that is when I truly become sattvic. But that will not happen overnight. Tomorrow I cannot get up and say that I'm going to start loving everybody. It's not possible. So the process is, you use all of these techniques which I spoke about in a way of converting yourself to a sattvic nature through the food we eat, through the activities we do, through the company that we keep, through the books we read, through the music that we listen. And over a period of time, Swami says, this will affect the antakarnas also, which means your thoughts get purified, the chitta shuddhi happens. And when the chitta shuddhi happens, that is when truly the vasanas start becoming more and more sattvic. And till then, the other qualities are always there. Tamas and rajas will always be there. But the moment when the vasanas start getting purified, the impulses of emotions which are in us start becoming, are more and more born out of love, I think that is when our nature itself becomes sattva. And even though the other qualities are there inside, even though I indulge in activity, even though I indulge in probably sleeping and eating, it will not affect the way my nature is. And my nature will remain more and more sattvic. And, you know, that's why if you look at all of these, it's so very simple. It finally comes down to, if I have to summarize whatever I have said, the complicated thing, which is, I think, more complicated to me than to all of you listeners. If we have to summarize this in understandable statements, what would you say? You would only say, see good, do good, listen to good, be good, and have good thoughts. And what Swami would say is, speak softly, speak lovingly, speak obligingly, speak less, and, you know, maintain silence whenever possible, and pray before you eat. All of these simple things which Swami has said is what is the essence of all this theory that we went through. And that's why I often like to think of it like this. You know, if you have to understand how mobile communication works, the communication technology behind a mobile, you'll probably have to go and do communication engineering or do a master's in communication technologies and communication science to understand how radio waves work and how the signal is transferred and how your analog signal is transferred to digital or whatever it is. I don't even know what it is. To understand that, you will have to go to the science. But to be able to use that mobile technology, even a 5-year-old kid can now pick up a mobile phone and use it, right? So if we are interested in science, if we are theoretical in nature and we want to understand what are the gunas and what are the panchabhutas and how did they all come about, yes, we can go back to the science. But the technology part of it, or the working model of that, is what Swami says in very, very simple statements. See good, be good, speak always obligingly, speak less, speak sweetly, pray before you eat, offer whatever you're eating to God, and pray before you go to sleep, pray in the mornings. These are all, they appear like very, very simple things, but these are what contribute to what we spoke about as how can we turn to the idea of sattva. I think I've spoken so much about the panchabhutas and the three gunas. In fact, I'm sure I've not covered a few of the aspects which Swami speaks about, but may not be relevant for the question. Now, coming to the three doshas. As I said, the gunas are very, very subtle, as we have seen it. It plays on the time of the day, the space, the people, the emotions, what we speak. But when we talk about the three doshas, or what we refer to as vata, pitta, and kapha, they represent more the gross body. It comes to the combinations that make the human body, right? So if a person is predominantly of one type, the Ayurveda, which uses this concept to a great extent, what the Ayurveda propagates is, you first ascertain what type of a person he is. Is he predominantly kapha or predominantly vata? And that is how you start treating that body when there is an ailment, right? So the concept behind that in Ayurveda is, they say that you don't try to change the nature of your body. If you're a predominantly vata person, you don't have to change what you are. It's just a piece of knowledge which helps you to deal with your body better. For instance, they often say, you know, a person who is a Vata body does not put on weight easily. You know, they can eat more and they will not put on weight easily. They're very, very agile. And contrast to the last one is Kapha, where easily puts on weight and tends to be more slothful. So Swami says that you can moderate these things by doing the right thing. For instance, if you are a person who is predominantly Vata, you choose a profession which kind of gives you an expression for that activity which is there within you. You cannot put a person like that in a job which does not have a lot of movement around. So when you understand your nature in that sense, the doshas, which is a predominant dosha, you can accordingly modulate your life so that you strike a balance within that. So just like how in gunas, you try to change the gunas by the company that you keep and the way you carry out your life and the choices you make. Here it is not that. Here you try to maintain a balance within the combination that you are born. And that is why this is more pertaining to the gross body. It is not so much to the emotions and thoughts as I can understand it. Because how are these three doshas related to the gunas? Again, these three doshas are also combinations of what we refer to as the panchabhutas. When we talk about vata, vata is told to be a combination of the akasha and vayu. Akasha and vayu together form the vata aspect. When you're talking about the second one, it is about the wind and the water, wind and the fire element forming the second one, and the last one is about the water and the earth element forming Kapha, right? So, if you look at it and if you're able to work back, you will see that which one has more sattvic nature, which one has more tamasic nature, and accordingly you start modulating yourself. So that's why they say if you're a person who comes under Kapha, then you realize that you cannot eat the same way probably another person eats. You have to acknowledge the fact that you tend to put on more weight eating less. So accordingly you modulate your diet. Accordingly you eat the right things. You are vulnerable to certain amount of ailments. So here, when you're talking about the three doshas, you're trying to maintain a balance within what you are. The idea is never to change what is your basic composition. But when you're talking about the three gunas, Swami says the effort is always to shift towards sattva. And the final step is to transcend even sattva. Because as I said, when you're talking about sattva, you're talking about the ego is actually born out of sattva. The feeling that I am separate is born out of sattva. It's one of the most pure feelings. That's why they say that the idea of maya itself is born out of sattva, right? The idea that there is two is born out of sattva. And if you want to reach the ultimate stage, you even transcend the sattva part. But of course, the process is through sattva. You reach sattva through modifying and sublimating each one of your thoughts. So I think that was the answer I wanted to give. I'm sorry if it was very, very complex. It is a topic which is very heavy and it is very difficult to speak all of that in 1 hour. I don't know how much justice I've done, but at least I hope I've given something interesting to think about for some of you. If you wish to go and read about it, I think if your aptitude is for such things, then you can probably go and read about it. It's a very interesting topic. But as I said, eventually, if you are following some of these simple dictums that Swami has given us, then you are, whether you know the science or not, you're using the technology, and I think that's what really matters. So I thank Ms. Praveena Kilpadi for the question. I promise that I'll take the other part of the question next week. And if there's any clarification that you want in what I've said, please feel free to write to me. With that, dear listeners, it's time for me to wrap up this week's program. A short while from now, you'll be joined by Brother Bishu for the last segment of the day, Vahini Satsang. As I said, next week I'll continue this question, but if you have a question and you'd like me to answer your question on the show, feel free to write to me. My mail ID is prem@radiosai.org. It's my personal mail ID, so the mails that you send there will be read by me. If you want to be anonymous, you can let me know. I will not mention your name. If, like Ms. Praveena, you can send your question in your own voice, that would be wonderful. It's always nice to play somebody else's voice on the show. I most humbly offer this effort at Swami's lotus feet. It's all from Swami's discourses. I wonder if not for Swami and Swami's message, whether we would have gone, at least I would have gone into all of these beautiful concepts that the questions that you have asked is giving me an opportunity to go into. So with much gratitude to Swami and gratitude to all of you for joining me week after week, I leave you all with a beautiful song, a song which I like. And on the other side of it, you'll be joined by Brother Bishu and his guest for the last segment of the day.
पल चैन न आवे सजना तेरे बिना सजना तेरे बिना ओ सानू एक पल चैन न आवे सानू एक पल चैन न आवे सजना तेरे बिना सजना तेरे बिना साडा कल्या जी नहीं लगना साडा कल्या जी नहीं लगना सजना तेरे बिना सजना तेरे बिना।